Conspiranormal. Welcome back, Luke. Hope you had a good weekend.
Good time. Awesome weekend. Excellent.
I understand that you got to see some like awesome movies this weekend.
Yeah,
you were telling me earlier today.
Totally. The first one being, I forget what it was called.
Was it Super Cyclone?
Super Cyclone, yeah. Super Cyclone. It's about a storm. It's about a cyclone, obviously.
That destroys the world or something?
A lot of Michael Bay explosions. No, it like is supposed to take out the whole California coast or something. I don't know. Travis was fast-forwarding because he's looking for boobs. So.
Yeah, did you see a lot of boobs in Super Cyclone? Shirts getting blown off or something?
I was hoping for that, but I didn't see any boobs, actually. I just saw some cheesy explosions in a four-minute scene of a carload of people getting picked up by a tornado and gently dropped back on the ground with no damage to the car that they were in.
You said there's like a 2-minute slow motion scene, you were telling me?
Like 4-minute slow motion scene.
Man, I mean, that's filmmaking
at its best.
Of
terrified faces.
Yeah. Well, there's other movies like that. There's like Two-Headed Shark Attack, which has Brooke Hogan and Carmen Electra in it.
Right.
I would have missed that one.
And Evil Bong.
Evil Bong. Yeah, I don't even know where to go with that.
Got to put that on your cue list, dude.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, you can rent it for $3.99 from YouTube.
You could buy it for $1 in the dollar bin.
So if anybody wants to go rent it on YouTube, you can definitely do that. I got the chance to go out with Dr. Future and a friend of his, and we went to the Black Raven Emporium, and they have a small little movie theater downstairs. There's a bar. It's kind of like a goth club. I don't know. Have you ever been to it here in Nashville?
No, I've heard about it, though.
And I got to see a movie called Basket Case from the 80s. And that one was real special.
Now, I've got that downloaded, ready to watch it.
Yeah, it's really awesome. Some really just great special effects. Some real cheesy 1982 claymation.
It sounds like the goth kids are the ones that we should be hanging out with.
Yeah, it didn't seem like too many goth kids. It seemed more or less like, you know, kind of horror fans that were down there.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to be like a goth club, apparently.
That's a pretty thin line between the two sub-genres there.
Yeah. You know? But if anybody's in Nashville, you know, they should check it out, because I think they do something every weekend. They had, like, shows of some like, you know, bad grindhouse horror film, like, similar to Basket Case. And, But if there's anything, we move on, but was there anything that you wanted to, like, say about, like, our interview with Adam Gorightly last time?
I just look forward to having him back on again. Like you said, he's just got these pockets of information over a wide span of topics, you know, and just seems to be full of knowledge.
Yeah, he does know quite a lot about his material and what he talks about. I want to have him back on to talk about maybe about like Charles Manson.
Yeah.
And some other things.
Yeah. And which our town, you know, Statesville, had a little firsthand experience with. Everyone, you know, the rumors about him living in the Devil's Racetrack cave down the street.
The Hippie Holler?
Hippie Holler, yeah.
Yeah, you should try to bring that up to him.
Yeah.
When we talk about it, because I kind of want to talk just about the Manson family and maybe a couple other subjects that he taught that he's written like whole books about this stuff.
Yeah.
But tonight we have a special guest that we're going to try to get on the line here in a second. His name is Bill Bean. He is from Baltimore, Maryland area. And he's someone that I've met at the Mid-South Paranormal Convention Conference. And he experienced a haunting in the 70s when he was a child and has just had a slew of paranormal things happen, from alien abduction to experiencing, not from himself, but a demonic possession of someone else, and also, you know, just the violent haunting type things in his life. And someone I've really wanted to get on for a long time. And If nothing else to say, Luke, we'll go.
What was that word that you said at lunchtime today? Like, that I didn't know what it meant? You know what I'm talking about?
You'd have to jog my memory.
Started with a D?
Dungeons and Dragons. I don't know.
I'll think of it later.
Okay.
Oh, the word for someone who does one thing and acts like they're doing so.
Oh, duplicitous.
Like, duplicitous.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you're always explaining your vocabulary when you're around me, right? All right. So without further ado, we're going to get to Bill Bean, and we will be back on Conspiranormal. Okay, and we are back on Conspiranormal. I'm your host, Adam Sain.
Co-host, Luke Reed.
And tonight we have a very special guest, someone that I have known about for a long time since watching a haunting on either the Discovery Channel or TLC. But this story, it was a story called, I believe, In a Dark Place. No, it wasn't that. Well, my mind is absolutely blanking right now. But this individual, his name is Bill Bean, and he has been through, I'd say, probably the gamut of paranormal experiences, from violent hauntings to experiencing having to exorcise someone who is demonically possessed, and even alien abductions, right down to UFO sightings. And he has had written two books. One's called Dark Force, and the second one is called Delivered. And they're both very excellent books that have made quite an impression on me. And I just want to go ahead and bring Bill on. Bill, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Adam. Thank you so much. Thank you both for having me on. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here with you.
It's good to meet you. We're excited to hear your story.
And sorry to blank on the what was the haunting series? What was the that called, that particular episode?
Yeah, it was the Discovery Channel series A Haunting, and the episode is called House of the Dead.
House of the Dead, yes. Bill, if you can kind of go, through your background and get us into like the story of the house, the haunted house in Harrendale.
Sure. I say in Dark Force that it all began in 1970 when my family and I moved into a three-bedroom ranch-style house located in Glen Burnie, Maryland, in a community called Harrendale. But it really goes much further back. After writing Dark Force, I learned additional information that indicates that something was going on long before moving there. It intensified when we moved there, but things were happening. I found out that my mom and her siblings had paranormal supernatural experiences in their childhoods. And I also found out that they moved around quite a bit as children. And at one point in their childhoods, they actually lived in that very area in Harrendale, not far from where the house was. So then I was given some old family photographs by my sister, and they had belonged to my mom. And when she passed, my sister had gotten them. And in some of the photographs, I was just absolutely floored in seeing some of the photos. I've had a plethora, as you mentioned, a plethora of paranormal, supernatural experiences over the course of my lifetime. And I have taken probably well over 1,000 photographs of anomalous phenomena, along with many hours of video footage as well. And so I'm always studying things. When I look at a photo, I'm not just looking at the person in the photo. I'm looking for other things going on there as well. It's just an automatic thing. And in some of these photographs, I found some very disturbing images. One was taken of my sister and I in 1968. Now, this predates moving into the house. I was 2, she was 11. And it'll be Christmas time, 68. We're seated behind a toy piano. My sister's to my left, and to her far left is this huge black cloaked figure, like a hooded black cloak, and the thing looks to be about 7 feet tall. And you can see it clearly in the photo. If you visit my website, billbean.net, click on Supernatural Photos, and it is there. And so, as you can imagine, I was taken aback by seeing such a photo, very disturbed, and not surprised. And then I found another photo that was taken of me in 1969, the following year. I was 3 years old, And in the photograph, it should have just been a photo of me, and I'm not sure if it was my mom or my dad who took the photo. It was a Polaroid photo. In the photo with me, lined up behind me in single file, are many different, I don't know what to say, call them beings, I guess, humanoid-looking beings, and they're in single file. And then if you look further at the photograph, you see many different types of faces, and some are non-human looking in the photograph. So I don't know what was taking place at the time that that photo was, you know, being taken, but it's almost like there was some sort of doorway that was open, a dimensional doorway or something that was open that allowed all these different types of manifestations to be in the photograph with me. So, you know, again, after learning this information, I thought, wow, you know, this is amazing that all of this activity was taking place predating moving into the house. So now, you know, in lieu of knowing that, I'm firmly convinced, and in further discussions with family members that would know, that someone many, many years ago did something, someone in the family did something to conjure up these demonic forces. And I feel that, you know, again, this was many, many, many years ago, you know, probably before my mother was even born. And I feel that, that those dark forces were upon the family and creating a variety of hardships and tragedies. You know, many untimely and tragic deaths have taken place in my family, on both sides of the family. And just some of the most bizarre things and circumstances. And so again, I'm firmly convinced that that dark force actually led us, my mom and, you know, my dad, and I have an older sister and younger brother, to the house in Herondale where evil was already present and manifest, because that area and is very evil, and the house is not the only house that has had problems. I still get messages from many people in the area to this day telling me that they are having problems or have had problems in their homes. So I'm firmly convinced that, you know, we were led there by that dark force where evil was already present and manifest. That's why it was so severe for us, and it greatly contributed to the destruction of my family. I have very little family left now. Most of them are gone.
Yes. And you feel that, that like that whole area, not just the house that you were in, that whole area is actually just haunted, that there's something just really bad about it.
Absolutely. Yes, I do feel that way. And about a year and a half ago, a family in the area not far from that house contacted me and asked me if I would come and perform a deliverance in their home and a house blessing, and I did that. And I believe me, I do not like going back to the area. I'm not afraid of anything. However, I get flooded with so many horrible memories just by going back into the area that it is overwhelming, and you know, it is not my favorite place to visit, that's for sure. So, however, that said, I will go anywhere that God guides me to go, because my life now is abundantly blessed. And part of the blessings is giving back to help others. So I believe God has called me to reach out and help other people who have had similar things happen or may, you know, be experiencing these things currently in their lives. And I'm happy to tell you that over the last several years, you know, God has worked through me to help many, many people and help them to be delivered from evil. And it's just a wonderful blessing. So, again, where my life was so horrible and so cursed, it is abundantly blessed now, and I can never praise God enough for what he has done, for what he is doing, and for what he continues to do. And so I think it was so important in writing both books, especially Dark Force, though, because I felt for the longest time that I wanted to share the story, and I'm going to get back into more of the story to give your listeners a better idea of this.
Sure.
But I feel it's important to let people know that for many, many years I wanted to tell the story. However, due to the tragic circumstances concerning my mother, I, you know, she had died when I was 14, and I just, after that happened, I just really didn't want to live anymore, to be honest with you, and I had quit school, lied about my age, and I went to work, and for the longest time, I just felt that I couldn't tell the story. You know, I always wanted to write a book, and I always wanted to share the story with people, and around, I guess, 2005, I just had a very strong urgency in my spirit that I needed to do this, and I knew it was God, and I kept resisting it because I felt that I wasn't adequately educated. I wasn't good enough. I wasn't smart enough to write a book. How could someone like me with limited education do such a thing? You know, only smart people can do that. So I, right then and there, I made a conscious decision to stop saying that and stop limiting myself by saying that, because when we say that we're not good enough or we can't do something, well, we're already defeated. That takes the effort away. So the only way that we can achieve anything, any goal that we set before us, is through hard work and perseverance and faith. And if we have those things, then there's nothing that we can't achieve. But if we go into it with the mindset of, no, you know, there's no way I can do this, I'm not good enough, well, we're already defeated. So I've learned some very important lessons as I have gone along here in life. So I would say from 2005 to current days here, God has blessed me with an abundance of wisdom and knowledge far beyond anything that I could ever imagine in my life. And I dedicated myself to start to do studies and to broaden my intellect. And where I said before, oh, I'm dumb, I have an eighth grade education, now I'm happy and proud to tell you, through hard work and lots of study, I am not a dumb man by any stretch of the imagination. You know, again, I praise God for helping me to increase my intellect. And now, you know, since I have gone through all these things with working very hard to broaden my intellect, I'm happy and proud to say that, yes, I got the story out. I was able to write the book. It was very, very difficult to write because I had to put myself back in those situations and relive all of those events all over again.
Right.
So, you know, emotionally and psychologically, it was very, very tough. It really was. And again, I had to rely on my strong faith to get me through. And God surely did that, because I do believe that He called me to write the book and both books and share my story. So I'm just happy and so fortunate to be in a position now to make a positive difference in people's lives. And as disturbing and terrifying as the story is, there really is a very powerful and uplifting message in the book. And it's just really both books, but especially in Dark Force, where people look at that as, you know, a horror story, and they wouldn't expect to see someone sharing their faith in there in the manner that I have. And, you know, again, those are not empty words when I praise God. I mean, those, I mean it with every fiber of my being that I can never praise Him enough. So, you know, I want the whole world to know that. But, you know, going back to the house, my mom was the first to have an experience, and it happened a couple days after moving in, and it happened in the living room. My dad, both my parents were great people, just wonderful people. My dad was a hardworking contractor. He was a master carpenter and very blessed with every attribute necessary to be highly successful in life. And my mom was a wonderful lady, a homemaker. And they were married in 56. My sister was born in 57. So my sister had some joyous childhood recollections in her childhood. But I wasn't born until 66, and my brother was born in 69. So, you know, unfortunately, we don't have any happy childhood recollections. And, you know, again, my mom was the first to have an experience. My dad had taken us, my brother and sister, with him to his parents' house for the day. So we'd gone with him to allow my mother, so she thought, peace from us disturbing her so she could unpack and organize the way she wanted to. So during the course of this, and she's alone in the house, during the course of this, she suddenly feels a presence. And she spins around. In her mind, she's thinking that, you know, it's my dad, that he has snuck back into the house. He's going to play a joke on her. He's going to try and scare her.
Right.
And so she spins around, fully anticipating on seeing him. And her shock, you know, nothing was there. And so, as you can imagine, she was unnerved by it and eventually able to go back to doing what she was doing. And it wasn't long after that that one of the bedroom doors slammed shut by itself, and that was enough to make her go outside and wait until we returned. So that's where it began. And then it gradually escalated into violent physical attacks on us from these demonic entities.
So the actual, like physical manifestation?
That's correct, yeah. Over the course of time, and how in the world we lived in that house for 10 years is beyond me. We lived there from 1970 to December 1980. I don't know how we did it, you know, and it wasn't until I sat down to write Dark Forest that it really hit me, and I thought, how in the world did we endure all of that? And you know, it really had intensified from 1975 to 1980 because, you know, upon moving in, now, by all accounts, my parents were married in 56. By all accounts, they were happy. My dad was a very good man. Both my parents were good people. My dad, he was just blessed. He really was. He was blessed, and it should have been highly successful in life. And his story alone is just so sad and tragic the way his life ended up. But it just seemed to all change very quickly, very drastically after moving into the house. And, you know, my dad was a man's man, was a very tough individual, however, had a very kind heart and a very charismatic side to him as well. And so he was what I would call a lighthouse type of person, to where he actually drew people to him. So again, you know, you're talking about someone that, and then just blessed these tremendous physical skills that were passed down to him by his father. And so he just was in a position for abundant success. And it wasn't long after moving in that his character began to abruptly change. And he went from this hardworking family man, he began to drink very heavily. And I think each and every one of us came under demonic oppression at various times of living in there. My sister was the first to have a physical encounter, and that took place late in 1970. And she never felt the same again, couldn't wait to get out of there, and she eventually ran away in the middle of the night in 1973 and married a young man in the neighborhood just to get out of there. And then it seemed like the focus went on to my dad. And though he would never admit it to us, he did confide in my mother's mother, my beloved grandmother, Dora Harvey. He confided in her that he was seeing apparitions and he feelings of presence. And so there's no doubt he was under spiritual attack. And he didn't know how to deal with that. Again, this is a man that, very tough and strong and proud man, not afraid of anyone or anything, however, was suddenly dealing with something that he could not control. So I think his escape from reality, and certainly the gravity of the situation, his escape was drinking. And both of my parents were social drinkers, and in the beginning, they did have, you know, some family gatherings and things of that nature, but as time progressed in living in the house, I do believe that those demonic entities had a hand in him really delving into heavy drinking. So he began to drink very heavily. His business began to suffer. He and my mom began to have arguments over this because he was staying out late at night. And some days he would not even go to work and go to the bar all day and then drink all night in the bar and then, you know, come home and, you know, very drunk. And naturally my mother was very upset by this. And then he began to physically abuse her on a regular basis between 1973 and 1975, nearly killing her on several occasions. I can recall being 8 years old, having to run and to neighbors to get the police called on my dad. And I have no doubt, based on what I witnessed, that while under the influence of alcohol, these demonic forces were able to enter him and fuel his rage towards my mother. It is quite miraculous that he didn't kill her. So he left us in 1975. Thank God he did. But when he left us in such a bad way that we had to go on welfare. And my mom, I failed to mention this, my mom was very ill the entire time that we lived in the house. She was suffering from high blood pressure, which led to a series of strokes, which ultimately led to kidney failure. She was very, very ill. She could not work. And he left us in such a horrible way with no money, was not sending any money home. He left and he moved to Florida. And it was horrible. We had to go on welfare. We ended up losing the house. The house was auctioned off in the front yard. I'll never forget it. And the man that bought the house in the public auction was aware of my mother's circumstances, and he allowed us to stay there on a pay-as-you-can-when-you-can basis. That's the most frequently asked question, why did you stay so long?
Right.
Well, my grandmother, my mother's mother, wanted us to come stay with her, but she and my step-grandfather shared a one-bedroom apartment. My mother was not going to burden them with us. And my mother's sister wanted us to come stay with her, but she had 8 children and a husband. And again, my mother was not going to be a burden to anyone. And as time went by, you know, again, each and every one of us came under demonic oppression at various times. And I feel that she was almost bound. You know, I say in Dark Forest, it was like we were prisoners in a POW camp. You know, we might as well have been in shackles and chains. We were defeated mentally, spiritually, and physically all the way across the board.
Sure. Bill, let me ask you about your father. When you and your sister, your brother, your mother, when you were having experiences in that home, and you would go to him, would he deny that there was anything wrong inside the house?
Yeah, he didn't.
All the while having the same experiences himself,
he didn't want to talk about it. Didn't want us talking about it. And would not talk about it with us or to us.
And one thing that I find interesting is that it seems that he had been the primary focus for a while, but at the same time, he wanted to really keep the house. And your mother, I think, was reluctant to keep the house, to stay there.
Yeah.
But as soon as he left, all of a sudden, your mother switched and said, "No, I want to stay here." It seems like there's some kind of demonic oppression going on there.
Sure, you're absolutely right. It's exactly what was happening, and it's a divide and conquer tactic. That's how these demonic forces work, to where they, you know, I've often said, it's like a spiritual virus. Now, usually, what happens is they'll find the weakest link, emotional person, you know, the weakest person in the emotion might be in a bad emotional state, or someone that's very fragile, you know, with their feelings or something like that, or their emotions. And they go to work on that person. And it usually starts there and then it spreads throughout the family. But the ultimate goal and focus is they want to get the head of the household out of there first, because A, there's strength in numbers, and B, when you get the strongest one out of there, it's a lot easier to conquer the other one.
Right, yeah, divide
and that's
conquer,
exactly
yeah.
What happened. Sure, that's exactly what happened. You know, they got the head of the household out of there. Once he left, again, my sister was already gone, so it was down to my mom and my brother and I. And after he left, my mother then came under regular physical attack from these entities on a, again on a regular basis. Got to the point to where she was being they were coming to her bed at night and waking her up by choking her, and she had cuts, bruises, and scratches on her long after my dad left. And I'm sorry to say that she was suffering these attacks up until the day of her untimely death. And, you know, it got to the point where she just couldn't sleep in her bed anymore. She had to sleep in with us. So, you know, as it turned out, there were three people living in a three-bedroom house that were sharing one bedroom now. And I'm ashamed to tell you guys this. You know, I'm a big, strong man now. I don't fear anyone or anything. However, yeah. Back then, as a child, if my mom had to use the bathroom, and it were, you know, if it was just the two of us in the house, I would wait outside the door until she came out. I mean, that's how bad it was.
Right.
We were just on the edge, constantly on edge. We never got proper rest in the house. I had suffered many physical attacks myself over the years, and after each attack, I always felt like I had the flu. I would have these fevers and body aches and things of that nature, and it was just awful. It was just, I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
It sounds like it was just a constant assault, just a barrage all the time.
Yeah, we never had any peace. We never got, it's miraculous that my mom lived as long as she did, because we were under so much stress all the time. So the mental aspect of it was far greater than the physical abuse. And we suffered, believe me, physically as well, but the mental strain that we were under was far greater.
What were some of the personal things that happened to you inside the house? How accurate is the haunting episode? How accurate did it portray what happened?
Well, the haunting episode is not that accurate. I'm grateful to them for, you know, airing it. And as a matter of fact, as we're doing this interview, someone sent me a message saying your show was on. They've shown that show so many times on every channel: Animal Planet, Planet Green, Destination America. And I'm grateful for that. I really am, because if not for that, then people wouldn't know my story. So I'm very grateful for that. However, the depiction was not very accurate. And when people read Dark Force, they see the difference and they say, wow, you know, I mean, there's some big differences here. And again, I have no ill feelings towards them at all. I'm grateful that they aired it. But really, the true and accurate story is in my book, Dark Force, and it will be also depicted on the big screen very soon, and it will be depicted in an accurate manner as well.
Oh, yes.
If it's not too much to ask, could you go into a little bit of detail about what some of these apparitions look like?
Sure. Well, the first attack that I had suffered was in 1971. Now, again, my sister had a physical encounter in 1970, and mine was very much like hers in the fact that late at night. And let me give a quick layout of the house so people can get a better understanding of this. The house is located at the bottom of a downhill cul-de-sac. And the house had a very ominous looking feel about it from the outside. It was semi-dilapidated. My dad, being a master carpenter, saw it as a restoration project, which he did quite a bit of work to it. The inside was equally ominous and foreboding, with dark brown paneling on the walls. I mean, it just looked black. Very little light came into the house, and it just had that heavy vibe to it. You could just feel that something wasn't right. And you'd walk in through the front door into the living room, and you would make a right down a long hallway that had hard tile floor. And I shared the first room on the right with my brother. My parents had the second room on the right, and then my sister had the room across the hallway, and we called that the back bedroom. That is the bedroom where the door would open and slam for many repetitions at a time. And I feel that room was the the vortex or the gateway or whatever you want to call it for those entities. I really believe that. And so, again, very much like my sister, middle of the night, something wakes me from my sleep. Now, my bed is closest to the door, to the hallway. My brother's bed was over near the window. And so I'm awake. I can't see anyone or anything there, but I know something's there. So I'm very frightened. And I go to get out of bed. I'm going to go and get my parents, and a tremendous force grabbed me by my shoulders, slammed me back on the bed. I was pinned on the bed on my back. And, you know, I've probably given nearly 800 interviews now. And every time I talk about this, it gives me chills. And I can't accurately describe it in words, the emotions that I was feeling at that time. I mean, just absolute off the chart trauma, you know, just terrified. My heart, I felt like it was going to jump out of my body. I felt like I was going to leave my body. I felt like I was going to die. And I'm 5 years old. Can you imagine a five-year-old suffering this kind of trauma? And I felt paralyzed. I felt that I couldn't move anything. The only thing that seemed to be working or moving were my eyes. I desperately tried to scream out for my parents, and my mouth wouldn't work. And the events that were taking place seemed like it was lasting for hours. I'm sure it was just several minutes, but it was horrible. And many horrible things were happening during the course of that. And it all stopped with the appearance and manifestation of what I believe had to be a divine apparition, because, you know, again, all of the horrible things that were happening to me suddenly stopped. And this lady appeared at the foot of my bed. I could see down the foot of my bed. And she had a white gown, or very pale blue, you know, it was like it was glowing. And long blonde hair. And she, with the appearance of this manifestation, all the horrible things that were happening suddenly stopped. She was gazing and smiling at me. I felt love and comfort from her. I felt safe with her being there. And the most amazing thing about it, as she stood there, you know, just smiling and gazing, and then just turned, and I believe it was to her left, and just went up, went right up through the ceiling. The most amazing part of the experience is that this manifestation looked exactly like my mother, exactly like her. And I wasn't the only one to see her. She helped me many times. She also helped my mom on many occasions. Now, can you imagine, you know, it's already crazy enough that you're being attacked by these otherworldly or supernatural forces, whatever you want to say, you know, these demonic forces. And then to have what we would believe, and what I believe to this day, was a divine manifestation appear and help, and actually help. It's just absolutely mind-boggling. And I can't imagine the emotions my mother must have been feeling at that time to see an apparition form that looked exactly like her.
Hmm. So she also saw the same, the exact same being?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, many of the family members, most of my family and friends, saw her as well, and she was erroneously depicted in the A Haunting episode as a sinister apparition, which is, you know, again, not true.
Right.
Not based on what
yeah.
my encounters were with that entity. And during the course of living there, I saw five manifestations, and four I absolutely believe were evil. One we called the Undertaker. This apparition or demon is a better term for it. It looked like a human male. black hair, like curly black hair, wavy black hair, black beard, chalky white skin, just very, very pale white skin, black eyes. It wore a black suit, sometimes it wore a black hat. And that is one of two entities that were regularly assaulting my mother. And the other had red curly hair, close, really close crop curly hair, clean shaven, a scar down the left side of its face. Again, very chalky, pale white skin, black eyes. Then another manifestation was a female, long dark hair, long black gown, sharp facial features, very sinister looking thing. And then the fourth was what I call the dark force entity, which was a hooded, black hooded entity that had red eyes, you know, no discernible features other than a pair of glowing red eyes.
Wow.
And
I'm sorry.
Do you feel that these were distinct entities, or do you think they were all the same thing, just taking different forms?
It's hard to say because, you know, I actually saw, and this was in 1979, after returning home from Florida, which I ended up having, I believe God orchestrated this, when I had a meeting with my Uncle Clifford, who was my dad's brother, my dad's older brother, very devout Christian. And we had a lengthy discussion while in Florida, and he shared that we could cast these things out in the name of Jesus Christ, and you know, that we did have power and authority over these things. God gave us power and authority over this. I believe that when Yahweh created us, he really did give us dominion over the earth and every living thing, and if in fact that's true, then we would have power and authority over Satan and his minions. So I've often said, Satan does not just come and just overpower us and take our power in that manner to where he overwhelms us. He comes and tricks us, and we give our power over to him. We give it over. He knows that he is under our authority. And so after that discussion with my uncle, little did I know that upon returning, I would engage in my first battle with these demonic forces. And I was 13 years old. It was 1979. And I just witnessed, I was in the house with five adults, and one including my mother, and she had a new man in her life at the time by the name of Richard. Richard was very much like my dad, very man's man, you know, very tough man, and former boxer. Yet he was physically assaulted many times in the house, was terrified to be in there. It was only his love for my mother that kept him around. So he was present on that day, and my Aunt Joyce and her boyfriend were also present on that day, and also my grandmother was present. So there were five adults present, and I was 13 years old, and my mom had just been picked up by an unseen force and hurled through the air by an unseen force. And she landed into her makeup table. She was cut open. She was scratched. And also at this point in time, we had a Catholic priest involved. Now, my family and I are not Catholic. However, my step-grandfather was, and he went to his church and made them aware of the situation. And they had sent a priest out, and I very much appreciate that. However, I have to say that the activity grew more violent and more intense with his involvement. I'm not putting any blame on him, but I'm just stating the facts. And at that point, he was bringing mason jars full of holy water. He was a frequent visitor to the house. We had a number that we could call him in the middle of the night if we needed him, and things of that nature. So after witnessing my mom being assaulted in this manner, something inside of me just snapped. And I grabbed the jar of the holy water, and I grabbed the Bible, and I began to call these things out in the name of Jesus. And here's where I made my mistake. You know, I was 13, and I'm calling them out, demanding them to show themselves. What I should have been doing is binding them and casting them out, and I didn't do that. I was calling them, demanding them to show themselves, and it was like a scene from a horror movie. the house began to vibrate. Things were falling off the walls. It was very chaotic. The adults were terrified. I should have been terrified as well, but I was not. And it was during the course of this that these four manifestations appeared several feet in front of me in the living room. The adults were standing behind me in the dining room. And we saw these apparitions very clearly for several seconds, and they manifested in like greenish, yellowish beams of light. We saw them clearly, and then after several seconds, they just dissipated. They did not just suddenly vanish. They did not go away or float up through the ceiling like the one entity that I described to you. They dissipated. And as they just dissipated in that manner, all the chaotic activity stopped, and we left and went over to Richards for the night. But that was my first battle with demonic forces, and certainly not my last. But it's just amazing. I think that it was part of God's plan there to maybe a test. And I have to say, again, I must reiterate that I wouldn't wish these experiences on anyone. However, looking at it in retrospect, I could not be where I'm at today had I not been there. So God does work in mysterious ways, and I do believe that he allowed me to experience some of those things to have me where he has me, in the position that he has me now, currently, in helping other people.
That's true.
You definitely don't hear about people getting tossed across the room very often. That's not a common occurrence.
Well, there were other times that my mom would try and lay down on the sofa. And again, my brother and I missed a lot of school as children because after these attacks, you know, I would feel like I had the flu. And he would get sick quite a bit as well. So there was quite a bit of sickness in the house always. And we weren't getting proper rest either. So it was very, very difficult to maintain a regular school schedule. So we both missed a lot of school as children. And there were times that if we were both in school, my mom would be in the house by herself, and there were times that she would try and lay down on the sofa to take a nap, you know, during the day, and an unseen force would actually levitate the sofa while she was on it.
Wow.
And she would have to jump off the sofa and run out of the house to a neighbor's house until we got back.
Wow.
That's how bad it was.
Yeah. Bill, what was the history of that area? The history,
well,
and the history of the house. Do you know much about it?
Yeah, a good friend of mine by the name of John D. Romine did some extensive research into the area. He's a retired police officer in the area, Anne Arundel County police officer, and he had found out that there's a structure located 2 miles south from the house, and it sits in the middle of the woods. And according, I've never seen this for myself, but according to him, he says that it doesn't match with any of the other landscape. It just looks like it was placed there. He said it's a gigantic three-story boulder-like structure called the Wishing Rock. And John said that many Native American tribes used to gather at this structure, saying it had supernatural powers.
Yeah.
And so if there's any truth to this at all, then it is possible that maybe this was a vortex or a gateway or some doorway for these entities to come through, and it has greatly affected the area because, again, I get messages to this very day from people in the area telling me about their experiences.
Yeah, so it's not just isolated to that house.
That's correct. Yeah, it's not isolated. And John said that also the houses there were built in the 40s for the some of the soldiers returning from the war. And prior to that, I think he said it was probably back in the, you know, Civil War times, it was a rifle range called Saunders Range, which was, you know, right in the immediate area. And he talked about tragedies occurring there as well. And behind the house was a very long and deep ravine. And I'll tell you, there are lots of brush, you know, down in the ravine, lined the banks on each side, but one spot in particular was such an eerie place in that ravine, and it was barren. Nothing grew there. You know, it was just like this barren place, and I heard that it was an Indian burial ground. Now, I can't confirm that. However, you know, that is what I heard, and I can tell you it was a very eerie place to be. And then I heard rumors that someone had died in our home in the back room where my sister, you know, made her bedroom, and that there were also bodies buried under the house. I can't confirm those rumors. I don't know. But, you know, you hear all kinds of things. And another thing that I heard is the people that lived there before us had done something very bizarre, which I never could figure out why the walls in our home were so solid, because the walls in most of the other Herondale houses were very, very thin. It would be very easy to put a fist or a knee or an elbow through those walls. However, the walls in our house were very solid. And we never could understand that. And then a reliable source told me that the people that lived there before us had done something very bizarre, in which they built walls over top of the existing walls in the house. Is that not bizarre?
Yeah, that is strange.
Bill, and I can also tell you... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
I can also tell you that as a child, I had developed a compulsion to dig into the walls. And, again, we had this dark brown paneling on most of the walls in the house, but in the closet... that I share with my brother, in that closet, it was like sheet metal, painted blue, and it was like riveted, you know, riveted sheet metal. And I just had this compulsion to dig in and open that. And I started off by getting a butter knife, I think, you know, and then I tried to went and got one of my dad's flathead screwdrivers and tried to dig in there. And, you know, again, I was very, very young. Had no idea why I was doing that, and thank God I didn't get it fully opened, you know, but these compulsions would come over us, and again, this was part of the demonic oppression that was taking place in the house.
Okay. Bill, and also, when you finally did leave the house, these things really did not stop for you. Maybe not as bad, but I think that later on, because you cover what happened inside the house in Dark Force, but you go on in Delivered and you talk about someone that you knew that became demonically possessed.
Yeah.
And then there was also the your alien abduction experiences.
That's correct.
UFO sightings, going out and looking for UFOs. Can you cover some of that?
Yeah, which, again, my final conclusions on that matter is that it is all connected. Let me start by saying this. I've done extensive studies into the Bible, the King James, the 66 books in the King James, and the 534 other books that were left out. I've done extensive studies into ancient history. I found 70 scriptures that talks about God, whose name is Yahweh, with the heavenly host traversing the heavens, which means skies, in flying craft. So, if that's true, based on those scriptures, if that's true, well then, I would have to believe that Satan and his minions would have the capabilities to traverse the skies in flying craft as well. Because
do it too, yeah.
I believe that, you know, Satan and his minions were cast out of God's heavenly kingdom, most likely in those flying craft. And if that's true, well, then they came down here, and some of them took human women and, you know, joined with those women and produced the hybrid offspring of the Nephilim, which most likely operate those craft as well. So I believe there's two sources there, and then I think that factions on the earth Some governments have back-engineered that technology, and they operate some of those craft. And then it is quite possible. We can't prove it. I don't see anything written anywhere that would indicate this. However, I would be open to the possibility to believe that Yahweh did create life elsewhere in the universe, in the vastness of everything. It is entirely possible. We cannot prove it. And until God himself or Jesus or an angel or something comes and says otherwise, you know, it's something that we're not to know. But so there are four sources for these sightings, you know, in the skies. And I have to believe, in my case, that the majority of those sightings were evil in nature because it nearly destroyed me. I had become obsessed with this phenomena. I began to take upteen pictures and shoot just endless video footage. I shot like over 16 hours of video footage, and every major news station in the area here covered my story. It was on the 6 o'clock news, you know, showing my footage and live interviews with me. I used to take people out on sky watches, and I had some of the news stations come out live, you know, with news interviews for the sky watches and things of this nature. And, you know, all the while, I'm thinking that, this is a great thing, and, you know, they're going to use me as some ambassador between them and mankind and things of this nature, and that's how Satan lies to us. You know, he manipulates us, and all the while, my life was crumbling around me. Yeah. I mean, everything was just going horribly wrong, and I couldn't see it because I was so immersed in this, and that is exactly how the enemy works. He takes something and makes it a compulsion, and he makes the person have tunnel vision for that, and where the person can't see anything else that's going on or going wrong in their life. And this is a very dangerous thing. And I lecture about this as well, Adam, that, you know, when I go to some churches, I lecture about this and try to warn people that, you know, we've got to be very careful, whatever it may be. You know, when dabbling into things of this nature, we got to be careful because it's very easy to get hooked into something like that, and then a person's life is destroyed. I've seen it. You know, mine was nearly destroyed. I've seen other people's lives destroyed, and it could lead to death. I mean, that is the ultimate goal of demons anyway.
When you go to churches, Bill, how do they receive it? When you talk about this kind of thing, about the paranormal,
once I'm there, they receive it very well because they feel my sincerity, and God always has this way, and I praise Him for it, of using me to make connections with people. So I don't know why it is; it's just His doing that when people hear me speak, they instantly feel a connection. So it always ends up, you know, people coming and sharing their stories with me, or they come up and ask me to pray for them, things of that nature. But it is very difficult getting into the churches to start with because a lot of churches don't want it. They don't they don't want that at all. They don't want to talk about that. And look, here's the thing. I'm not trying to bring a bad thing onto someone. I'm not trying to open the doorway and say, you know, here, take this terrible story in. What I'm trying to do is build faith for people and say, look, God brought me through some of the very worst of circumstances in life. And if He could do this for me, He could do it for you and you and you and you and you. Anyone who calls on Him, anyone that shows any kind of faith, He will reward our faith by delivering us. Now, I know it's true. I'm a walking miracle from God. So that's how it ends up. But a lot of times, you know, in contacting churches, they are just not receptive. Sorry to say that, you know, a lot of the churches now, not all, but a lot of them, they're into the prosperity thing. They're into, you know, and again, there's nothing wrong with prosperity. There is nothing wrong with prospering in life. That's a wonderful thing. However,
yeah, I agree. Yep.
If you're preaching a doctrine that again, totally focuses on that, and you're not focused on what God says. You're not focused on how he wants us to be towards each other. You know, I've seen some people who claim to be Christians treat people horribly, and they want to shut people out and say, you know, you're damned to hell, and you're this, and you're that, and I can't talk to you because you're this, and you're that. Well, I learned a lot of lessons there as well, and I live by two things. I love God with everything, every fiber of my being. He is first in my life. My wife and I make him first. And that's number one. Number two, I love my friend, my neighbor, my brother, as I would myself. I try to treat people the best that I can possibly treat them. I try to be the best that I can be each and every day, and I always try to help others to achieve being the best that they can be. So if we can do this on a daily basis, the world suddenly becomes a better place because people care about each other. That's what we've lost, yeah. And we need to get back to that. And even a lot of the churches, they don't care. If you are not giving them money, if you don't serve a purpose to them, they don't care, and they have no use for you. So it really enrages me when I see some people treated in this manner, and I do get those messages a lot from people who say that, you know, they've had supernatural problems and demonic problems, and they went to their pastor, and the pastor turns them away and says, well, what do you want me to do? I don't know how to deal with this. I'm not equipped for this.
They don't know how to handle it.
Yeah, I mean, what are we doing here? What? Something is lost. And what it is, people need to get back to following God. Now, there are 34,000 different Christian denominations. 34,000, that's a real number. So, 34,000, that means there's 34,000 different doctrines. So, that tells me that men have made up their own doctrines, and they have gotten away from God, and they are following their own doctrines. And this is, so if you have 34,000 different Christian denominations, and then you factor in all the other world religions, well, you've probably got over 100,000 versions of one truth. How can this be? I'll tell you how it can be. Satan is the author of confusion. He is the one that brings up the barriers and divides people. Why? Because if you divide people, you can conquer them. It's easier to conquer them divided. United we're strong. Divided we will fall. He knows it. That's what he does. That's his MO. People can't understand it. They can't realize it. So I can tell you this right now, the way I live my life, I love all people. I don't judge anybody. It's not my place to judge anybody. Each and every one of us will stand before God one day for something. We're all guilty of something. There's no perfect people that walk the face of the earth. So all
That's
we
entirely
can do,
true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all we can do is just try and be the best that we can be each and every day, and we hope that God will use us to be a blessing to somebody. That's it.
Well, let me ask you, Bill, too. We're kind of back to the beginning of the show a little bit. You had mentioned that someone in your family, possibly way back, had done something in the past. Do you have an idea of what that was?
Again, loosely, a loose base idea, because we're probably talking, it could be back in the early 30s that someone did something, and I'm by hearsay, but it's possible that they did something to conjure up these demonic forces. Now, whatever that entails, I'm not entirely sure, but, you know, was it a Ouija board? Was it some sort of summoning? I don't know that for sure, but I have a strong inclination and feeling about it that it probably most likely was something along those lines.
Yeah. Well, people go and in my opinion, well, my co-host would differ a little bit, but people that go in and mess, I think, with the occult, I don't think they really know what they're doing. So.
You are exactly right, and we have to be super careful because, again, when one goes into these realms, they are literally swimming with sharks.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't know what's there.
Someone has to have a real curiosity for the unknown and uncertainty, and I'm sure you wouldn't know what to expect, messing around with occultism.
Yeah, it's you know, again, it's playing Russian roulette, and chances are, more than likely, Satan is going to launch an attack on that person, and horrible things are going to happen.
Yeah.
And again, my best advice to people like that, which people do come to me for deliverance from those types of things, and I don't condemn them, I don't beat them down, I try to just strip all that away from them and build them up. You know, I'm a people builder, and that's what I want to do. I want to bring people up, and the first thing I try to instill in people is to make your personal connection with God. That is number one, and ask Him to forgive you for everything. And I say to people, look, get on your knees and just confess it to Him. He already knows, but confess it to Him. He delights when we come to Him as children and we confess everything, and He does reward us with a blessing afterward. So that's the first and main thing, and no one is beyond redemption. We all, by having free will, we are free to make our choices. And if we choose to do good and to be good, hey, it's by our choice, but we can also choose to do the other things as well. It's all by our free will, which God gave to us. So, you know, we have to be very mindful and very careful there as well, because each and every one of us have the propensity to be good and to do good, but we also have the propensity by our choice to do evil. And so I choose life, I choose good, and these things come from God, and I just endlessly praise Him and will forever praise Him. Now, does that mean that I am sin-free? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I sin just like everybody else. I try not to. I try to be the best that I can be, but I fall short just like everybody else, and anybody that says otherwise is a liar.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's very true. Bill, when you go to paranormal conventions like the Mid-South, how do you feel when you go to those specific kind of events?
Well, I feel everywhere I go, you know, when it's into a type of event like that, I'm very different, I'll say it like that. You know, I'm kind of like the sore thumb. Now, I love people, and I love a lot of people there and people wherever I go, and people receive me where I go, wherever I go, and that's a wonderful thing. However, people also know that I don't go into those areas that a lot of those people do go into, and have no desire to, so they know that as well. But there's a respect, you know, I respect everyone, and I get respect back,
right.
And I just always try to be a blessing to somebody, and, you know, it's amazing that some of those people do come to me for prayer, for deliverance, and share problems with me and want to be delivered from being involved in things like that. And even at some of my lectures where, you know, a lot of my appearances are just me appearing by myself, a lot of times at those events, you know, people come up for prayer or deliverance, and it's just very, very powerful.
Well, Bill, we're almost out of time, but you wanted to make an announcement in the time that we had.
I'm very, very happy to, first of all, I want to thank you guys for having me. It's been amazing.
Thank you.
It's been great talking to you.
Yeah, I look forward to coming back again soon. Just send me some dates and we'll do it again soon. But
absolutely.
I am so happy to tell you that I have recently signed a movie deal with 35mm Pictures, and they are going to be making Dark Force the movie. And so, very excited about it. They are looking to do the shoot in late winter, and they are hoping to have the film out by this time next year. So I praise God for
excellent.
That, because again, we're gonna keep the integrity of the story, and I'm listed as executive producer, so I will have power to make sure that the story is kept pretty much intact.
Yeah, as I think that it's. Without all the Hollywood fluff, I don't think you need to add too much there, because it's as terrifying as it possibly needs to be as a true story. And
absolutely.
I really hope that it's treated well. I really do.
Yeah, I'm very blessed. And again, I believe that God brought this together, and everything is in His time, and we praise Him for it. So I'll keep you guys updated on everything and as it progresses. It's very exciting. I'm very much looking forward to going and doing this shoot. I'm going to be on the set for 8 weeks. And I'm just very, very much looking forward to it. And it's going to be amazing to see the final product and to see it out in the theaters and on the screen. And I just hope that it is not only well received, I hope that, you know, again, like the book, as disturbing and terrifying as it is, it will leave audiences with a positive, uplifting message. That's going to be the overall message, just like sure. the book.
Bill, is there anything that that you're studying now that particularly interests you?
Well, I try to study everything. You know, my mind is like, you know, we never stop learning, and I'm always seeking answers for different things, and I can't get enough. You know, I am a knowledge seeker because I'm a truth seeker. I like to know the truth so I could speak the truth, so I could teach the truth. And that's, again, that's part of my makeup. And so I'm always seeking answers in different areas in life and different philosophies and historical aspects as well. Sure. So, but for anyone out there who would like to order copies of my books, please visit my website, www.billbean.net. For anyone out there who is in need of prayer or deliverance, please contact me on billbean.net. You can email me personally from the site. I answer every single email. It would be my honor and pleasure to help you.
Bill, stay on the line. We're going to close it out here. And Luke, I think we're going to go to take a little break. And
all right.
We'll be back on Conspiranormal. And we are back on Conspiranormal.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to close out the show. Luke, what did you think of Bill Bean?
He's a pretty cool guy. And what I found most interesting is the encounters are just more intense, you know, than
yeah.
pretty much any other haunting story I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy stuff. And I mean crazy, not like insane, but just...
Yeah, just tossed know. Across the room and yeah. as far as objects go. And
the descriptions of the entities that
right.
he saw.
Yeah, and several, like a nice variety of entities too.
And them being sick and not being able to go to school yeah. and just the assault that they were under.
That's something that I kind of wanted to say too during the show is a lot of people... You know, they get into like occultism and like dark arts and stuff like that, kind of romanticize what demons would look like, you know, and they want to see them and feel their power and stuff
yeah.
like that. But they're not taken into consideration that if you invite darkness upon yourself, that it usually takes, an ugly form, you know, it's
yeah,
not going to be
form,
what
yeah.
you expected to see, like, you know, some big powerful being before you. It's more like you've got terrible luck and everything starts crashing all
right.
around you, which is, you know, what he's saying happened
yeah.
to him all of those years.
Which happened to, really, I mean, really to his parents, but first to his father and then to his mother.
Yeah.
And then just it was like just an avalanche, just a snowball effect.
Yeah.
And you kept getting like a weird phone call right in the middle of the while we were talking to him.
Yeah, it seems like someone's trying to call me from Skype or something because it's not regular phone numbers. They're all too many digits or too little digits. And
I think it's the NSA.
And then now it's unknown. So
and now it's unknown.
Now it's unknown. So
oh.
I have no clue.
Well, hey, next time we're gonna have. For a Halloween show, we're going to have Stephen McDougall and possibly another one of
McDougall.
His group.
McDougall.
Of the Tennessee Wraith Chasers.
Right on.
And these couple guys that we've gotten to know. Luke, you've never met him, but a certain person that we know and myself have gotten to work with them. And it's helping them do some tech work. So going to have him on, talk about their stuff. And also, you know, interesting for me that they have this kind of Christian angle to what they do. And you don't see too much of that in ghost hunting. So just thought that was interesting. But I'm not going to bore you too much with it. So because I know you want to conjure up, do some Enochian magic.
Yeah. When I get home, I'm
going to Adam Go-Rightly,
I'm going to put some language of the Magi on, some scrolls, and then I'm going to write it in my blood and then try to make a homunculus too while I'm at it.
Do it, man. Just you know, listen to those goats brain.
The brain goats
right?
on the tape.
But anyway, I think we're going to close it out, call it a night, and I've thoroughly enjoyed your guitar playing.
Thank you.
Through the entire show. It's been very nice and soothing while we talked about people being tormented by demons.
It's hard for me to sit here still with nothing in my hands to do.
Okay, we won't even go there. All right, well, join us next time for
Conspiranormal.
Ha ha ha.